Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis, here with the number two cam girl in North Korea. Kyle, I told you should have worn the leather bustier this week.
Damn it, I got downgraded. Yeah, no, we are ready for Victory Pot, Victory Scott cast number seven, Travis.
Number one in the NFC North, Kyle, that all is, alone.
This is the third season that we have done the Scottcast part two, Scottcast version 2.0, and this is now tied for the most victory Scottcasts we've gotten to do, because 2023 they won seven games, last year they only won five. We've cleared all that.
Setting records here. The only record the Bears are concerned with right now is how many victory Scottcasts do we get.
Absolutely. So yeah, that was something.
It was certainly a game. I love that we have so much to talk about. What happened was football.
There was a lot happening there. I think it's, well, we'll start where we always do. We'll start with Caleb Williams, but I mean it this time. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about Caleb Williams this week, for one, this is, like, that was a perfectly average game from actually better than average for a second year quarterback. I was just saying, that was not a game. I saw some people worrying about Caleb after that game, people saying he took a step back, focusing on completion percentage, blah, blah, blah. That was, I thought Caleb on the road, under pressure on over 50% of his dropbacks, blitzed goddamn. Depending on which site I've seen one site say that he was blitzed on 67% of his dropbacks, another said 78%. I'm sort of wondering if maybe one maybe confused pass attempts with dropbacks. Either way, blitzed basically a career high percentage of his dropbacks. He got out of there without a turnover worthy play. I felt he had a couple egregious misses on the first couple of drives. I thought Ben Johnson had some really good comments on that, where he was talking about the go ball to Rome. He was like, for basically his first throw of the game, when you haven't gotten a rhythm yet, those go balls, I'm not really too upset at that one. He was more upset about the second miss to DJ, as was I. But I also thought, did you see, Travis, where Ben Johnson said he was asked a question about go balls and 50-50 balls and explained why we haven't seen a lot of those? I thought it was a really interesting answer.
Yeah, I saw he essentially said that he's not into those things.
Yeah, he said he hates 50-50 balls, and I love that because it gets exactly to the kind of egomaniac complimentary that Ben Johnson is, that he's like, I can do a lot better than 50-50 on any given deep passing play. Let me draw up something that has a better than 50% chance. 50-50 is settling. So I liked that. It was kind of interesting, though. It filled in some blanks, I think, for some of the play calling. I think we were a little worried that was more of a Caleb issue, but it seems more that that's just Ben doesn't like those. So maybe we'll never will see a whole lot of those. Although I do think Flores kind of picked up on that, and that's why he was willing to concede that, knowing that Ben doesn't like them and knowing that Caleb hasn't always hit them. And I know there's a lot of consternation.
We talked about this last week. If he can't hit him, if he doesn't hit him, if he won't throw him, they're just going to say, okay, like, we're only sending one guy deep, and then guess what? You have to deal with everybody else.
Yeah. I thought Caleb was fine. I thought he settled in after those first couple drives, in the second half especially. I think it was, hold on, let me try to find, what was his? Bears, Vikings. I'm trying to find out, because this was something Nate Tice mentioned on his, when he was talking about, the completion percentage wasn't that great, but it was his success rate on dropbacks was surprisingly high. Hold on, I'm pulling up box scores. Let's find. I can do this. Okay. Gap traffic.
Pumping
gap
yourself up to find a box score.
Oh, I'm trying to find. If I know what I'm looking for. Okay, so it was, success rate. Okay, so his success rate on dropbacks was 41%, which isn't not great, but it's not horrible either. And he had a success rate of 50% on rushing plays. So overall, his drop back success rate was pretty solid. In the second half, especially, I thought, you know, they went on some long drives. They're still having trouble finishing drives, still having trouble in the red zone. But yeah, I that was the most, please don't turn this into a referendum game on Caleb Williams possible. Especially because, I mean, I know it's for you, especially it's a pet peeve, but like you have to give defenses credit sometime. And I think people are under the impression that the Vikings defense has been bad this year. Like it's fallen off major. And I think that's because like the only nationally televised games they've had, they didn't do so great against Justin Herbert and Aaron Rodgers, but they had some guys out with injuries when that happened. And actually like they have only had, I think, three games total this year where they've given up even 200 passing yards. And I was just pulling up their box scores for other games before this. And, you know, they're seventh overall in dropback, EPA per dropback in pass defense, seventh overall in success rate. So it's a top seven pass defense. And I think they've only had, you know, like two, Herbert and Rodgers were the only two guys to really have like a positive EPA per dropback against them this year. Like that is a very good pass defense. Brian Flores is very good. Just the week before the Bears went up there, they held Lamar Jackson to 176 yards, forced a couple turnover-worthy plays. He was not having a particularly great game. So, I mean, I get it with Caleb Williams. It gets exhausting, but, like, that is... I was not discouraged. I mean, I'm not going to say he's secretly, he was amazing, and like, that was not a Caleb Williams statement game either, but, like, he was fine. I think there's so much overemphasis on Caleb every week, and for good reason, but, like, this is just not the game that I want to turn into the Caleb Williams referendum.
Yeah, like, look, we're at the point in the season, we're 7-3. We are in first place in the NFC North through 10 games. We're not even tied. We're not even tied with the Lions anymore because the Eagles took care of business as part of our alliance, our alliance with the evil Philadelphia Eagles until Black Friday. So at this point, my mindset is completely off of, you know, future development of Caleb. Like, oh, is he going to be good down the road? Is he going to be good next year? Is this good for his development? That's loser shit. I put that in the loser shit category. If we were 3-7, okay, now I care about Caleb Williams' development, right? Like, if I'm the Vikings, if I'm the Cardinals, if I'm like Atlanta, if Penix didn't just go down, you know, if I'm one of these teams in the future, then yes, I'll spend a whole bunch of time on Caleb's future. Like, in this game, he didn't look good. No, like you said, the Vikings have a really strong defense. There were a couple plays there where I was honestly, like, mystified on the All-22 of how they covered everybody. I wouldn't say it's really a Caleb thing, but I would say Ben Johnson had his lunch eaten twice this year by Brian.
Yeah, Flores. I don't think... I mean, I will say this. I don't think Ben Johnson had a horrid game. I felt like... it took him and Caleb both about a quarter and a half to really figure out what Johnson was or what Flores was doing. And then from there, I felt like they had like a pretty success, like a lot of long drives, a lot of successful drives. There were just some situational stuff. Some, you know, the Travis Homer sweep was dumb. The Tyson Bagent is in and we're going to get stuffed for short yardage play was dumb. You know, he just kind of had some moments, but like the, like on a per play basis after the first quarter, I felt like the Bears really did have control of the game, and that's borne out in the, whatever you want to use, success rate, EPA, the yardage. But yeah, I don't think it's loser shit to prioritize Caleb Williams. Like I get with everyone who is like, yeah, the most important thing this season is coming out with an answer that Caleb Williams is a guy. But I think there is room. And I think, you know, even this season, like, as much as they're 7-3, and the goal at this point absolutely should be to make the playoffs, but, like, we were just talking today in the Discord about all the ways in which the Bears could even win 10 games and still miss the playoffs from here. It's kind of insane. The playoff odds are still...
What's insane to me is talking about that at this point. Like, look what we're doing next week. Like, this game coming up is against the Steelers, and season we've been like, we're going to get Aaron Rodgers one last time. Sorry, it's Mason Rudolph. Aaron Rodgers broke his wrist. Like, we played Joe Flacco.
It might be. They haven't
in the wrong city in Ohio this year.
They haven't officially declared that yet. Rodgers is going to push to play. I'm just thinking
with the cast. It is his
number. I'm just saying, like, I don't blame anybody for like that's concerned weekly about Caleb Williams' development. I'm obviously concerned about that. And I don't want to lose sight of the fact that like I said before the season, if they managed to get 9 wins and Caleb and Ben had a top half of the league offense, I would be happy with that. And I still would consider that a successful season. I can't say right now I'd be happy with that from where they're at right now, but I can see how that can still happen because I am still very concerned about this defense. But no, anyways, to put the Caleb Williams stuff to bed, all I'm saying is that this is not the week to really be making any declarations of what he did or didn't do. Absolutely, put some respect on the Vikings defense. That was quite a performance from Brian Flores.
Yeah, like I don't think it's a referendum on Caleb as a pro, Caleb, or overall or going forward, but you know, watching the all 22, I would say like this has got to be his worst performance this season. He was absolutely, even on plays where he wasn't about to go down, he was hearing those footsteps, man. He has an interesting tick, if you want to call it that. He really doesn't want to throw the ball to Kyle Manongai in particular. He kind of looks at him and makes eye contact. And
that one, I don't think is... No, that one I've noticed is because Caleb is very methodical about the timing of the play. Like, he's working so hard on the timing of the play. And I think Kyle Manongai keeps fucking up the timing of the play. He is late consistently at releasing into the pattern. And so when Caleb is looking at him, Kyle is already too slow to get to where he's supposed to be. And Caleb, man, he is working so hard on that footwork and the timing of the play, he moves off of it because he's like, nope, you're too late. And I think he's already thinking, like, if I check it down to him right now, there's not a potential for yak, so it's time to look for a scramble. It's time to look to creation mode. I don't think that is necessarily like
I buy into that if it's before he's spun out of the play, you know, gotten away from a defensive end. But multiple times in this game, he was he was running away.
Yeah,
and
once
he
he's already
wouldn't throw it, you know.
Yeah, I do sort of wonder if some of the drops they've had on the scramble play, and I mean, if you're Caleb Williams, he's getting so much contradictory information right now, man, because it's like, how many times are people like, he needs to just run it? No, he should scramble throw this. Like, I mean, and I'm sure he's thinking, he's doing that you can see him doing that calculation every time where he's like, well, I don't know, I mean, I could throw it to Manongai here, but if he drops it again, everyone's yelling at me that I didn't just take the yards with my legs. And you know, it's like he can't win. I wouldn't say that it was his worst game by any means, especially because I mean, I actually didn't think Flores fooled him that badly. Like, he didn't have any turnover plays. I mean, turning down the checkdowns, and what's interesting is Ben didn't really call that out at all. He didn't seem to think that was a problem. He said that he thought Caleb played a pretty solid game. I still think tape wise, I think Caleb's worst game this year. Well, I thought he played worse the first week against the Vikings.
Well, so he was worse the first week against the Vikings, but I kind of give that a mold.
And I kind of, honestly, game. I kind of thought in some ways the Commanders game was worse from a process standpoint. I don't know. I didn't walk away from this tape super concerned in any way about Caleb at all. I just thought, I thought he settled in after the first quarter. I thought in the second half, especially, he played pretty strongly. He was mostly betrayed by drops more than anything in the second, and there were, you know, 4 throwaways in there too. I just thought, you know, Brian Flores is going to get his sometimes. And I, like I said, if you compare him to other quarterbacks against Flores this year, the only two that were more successful were Justin Herbert, and that was in the one game this year where Justin Herbert basically had a healthy offensive line and the Vikings did not have Van Ginkle and I think a couple other guys. And then Aaron Rodgers, who has, you know, the one, I was saying this on Twitter, but the one solution truly to Brian Flores is just a veteran quarterback who has seen all the shit. Like, that's the only people that we see.
Is it a troll that you're leaving off Jalen Hurts' perfect passer rating game from this year?
No, I forgot all about that. 26-yard,
3 touchdown game.
No, I forgot about that one too. But that one was also, when they had, I think they were missing Van Ginkle and they were missing a couple others there too. Well, and that is the other solution to Brian Flores, is that the Eagles, that was when the Eagles also finally got their offensive line healthy and they just blocked up everything. I didn't think that was the Bears' best game from a pass pro perspective either. Because I mean, the thing about Brian Flores is because going into this game, Caleb was very good against the blitz. Actually, he was very good against the blitz on Sunday. That kind of surprised me too.
Yeah.
He was 14-25 on the blitzed pass attempts, with all 3 drops coming against the blitz too. So without the drops, he basically had an adjusted completion percentage of 17. He was 17-25 target-wise against Flores's blitzes, which is very good. It was actually the non-blitz dropbacks, the 10 or so that he got, where where Flores kind of did, you know, his sim pressures, and you think guys are coming, and that's where Flores is really, really diabolical, because he gets you to just waste guys. You know, you're keeping in seven to block, but then all of a sudden they have eight in coverage and there's no one to throw to, and but they're all in zone, so they've all got eyes on the quarterback, so you can't just scramble. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, like, the quarterbacks who have succeeded against Brian Flores since he came to Minnesota are extreme veterans. Like I said, Lamar Jackson wasn't even that great against him. And plus, you want to talk about Flores versus Lamar Jackson, you guys should go back and look at what Flores did to Lamar Jackson when he was in Miami and Lamar was in Baltimore, and Flores just like fucking zero blitzed him all game long, and Lamar had no answers. Like, it's nothing to overreact to or to be concerned about at all. I think, you know,
not a great game, but also not the worst game ever.
Yeah, it was like,
just because Caleb isn't going to turn the ball over. Like,
right,
you said no 50-50 balls. There were a couple times there where, you know, during the game live, I was thinking, man, maybe just give Loveland a chance, like on that shot to the end zone. Like, I know you don't want to put the ball in harm's way, but it's like Loveland on a corner. Like,
where, if you want to talk about a player that I think that game was a referendum on, I think some of that is that, and some of Ben's play calling, I think, especially reflected the fact that neither one of them has any respect for the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. And I think that is in Caleb Williams' head in that second half a lot when they're up 16-3, et cetera. He's thinking, the only way I can fuck this up for us is if I let them pick me off. Ben, I think, is thinking that too when he's calling run plays on third and four in field goal range. He's thinking, like, 3 points is huge here, because that kid's not going to fuck. You know, if Cairo Santos nails that kick to make it 19-10, the game's over. And you could tell that I think everyone in the stadium and everyone watching the game was thinking that. And I think that does kind of affect the play calling and Caleb's decision making in a game like that. I think he was definitely, you know, he didn't go full Eberflus mentality, but I think he was very much like, the worst thing I could do here is commit a turnover and give Minnesota's offense a short field when they can't earn it on their own.
Yeah. If you remember all the way back to last year in the game against CJ Stroud, where he tried to sun Caleb Williams and his whole career fell apart. The thing I said after that game was, the one thing Caleb should take away from CJ in this game is sometimes you just have to be the guy who doesn't get upset about what's happening first, right? You don't want to make the costly interception just because you're frustrated, just because you're having a bad day, right? You just get out there, don't turn the ball over, try to win a Ferentz game, and then get the hell out of town. And that's what he did here. He was just like, you know, we're playing conservative. My guys keep dropping passes. I can't trust DJ Moore to be where I want him ever. I don't know. I'm not going to risk anything, you know?
Yeah, that is, I think, one, like, DJ Moore is officially a problem. Like, didn't come down with that touchdown last week against the Giants, but it's also just, I mean, this comes up a lot when JT O'Sullivan is watching Bears film every week. The phrase, he is a hard guy to throw to, because he's just, you know, weirdly enough, two different people today made the comparison basically to Zach LaVine. It's LaVine, right? I don't watch the Bulls.
LaVine,
full confession, where he was just like, he's the kind of guy that's a good player on a bad team, but he's just not a winning football player, because he's made to freelance and get open when he's being force fed targets in a bad passing offense, but he does not win on time, does not win in structure on a good one. And he makes it so hard to throw him the ball. And in this game, God damn, the one that he ended up having to catch between his legs was a perfect ball, anticipatory. Caleb threw some fucking anticipation strikes against the blitz.
The thing you could say about Caleb, man, even if he struggles in a game, he's always got like 10 passes these days.
Yeah, there's like 10 where you're like, gorgeous. Holy shit. Yeah, but anyways, he fucking hits him between the numbers, and there is, and because of the way Flores plays, it's not all that dissimilar to how Dennis Allen is. It's like, look, he's going to just gamble everything so that you don't even throw the ball, because if you complete it, there's going to be room to run. And he had so much room to run on that one, and he misplays it. He has to catch it with his legs just to get a completion out of it, but he turned what should have been a 40-yarder into a 20-yarder. And then later in the game, he has that beautiful, and Caleb is firing that thing out there before he's even out of his break, and there is one guy between DJ Moore and the end zone if he catches. That's maybe, I don't know, I can't remember where he was when he threw the, but a 60-yard touchdown if DJ just catches it cleanly and he fucking biffs it again. And you can, you pull up the goddamn film again, watch him just, there's one play especially, you watch the disparity between how Colston Loveland is hustling on the scramble drill and how DJ Moore is just fucking jogging his ass, just kind of aimlessly drifting, not working his way back to the quarterback, not doing anything by any kind of scramble. It's so fucking infuriating.
Yep.
And I don't even think it's effort, because like he's given his efforts out there sometimes on run plays and stuff. It's just I just don't think he's built for this, man.
Yeah.
He's just not that kind of guy.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing, is this game really made me believe, like, yep, he's trying. He's out there. He looks a lot like the DeAndre Swift of wide receivers. He's trying ass off. He's doing the best he can, I think. And I think he is just lost.
Yeah,
he feels lost on the field. He's not, nothing he does is tight. Like, his routes aren't tight. His catching the ball seems to be like he's a little bit absent-minded about it. Even his blocks, it's like he's always questioning himself. Like, he's never had an offense where he had to really think about things. And it's just, he's been a massive detriment. He played a lot this game. He was on the field for 81% of the offensive snaps, and I can't think of any time where
you were just like,
oh,
thank God we have DJ Moore. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, we thought Luther Bird might be replacing DJ Moore out there. And really, he's siphoning targets off of Olamide Zaccheaus. And I can't believe DJ Moore is making me wish Zaccheaus was in the fucking game.
I sort of wonder
where I did think about it.
I sort of wonder if we're just reaching the point where the Bears' best grouping is 12 personnel with Burden and Rome, Komet.
A lot of 12 personnel in this game, and boy, that really worked. When this offense was working, it was Komet, it was Loveland, and it was Burden and Rome on the outside.
And it would have worked even better if Durham Smythe could catch the fucking ball, which, I can't get too mad about Durham Smythe, but that is the downside to, because some of the answer to what Brian Flores does is to run 13 personnel, which Ben Johnson did, but that does mean that when your quarterback works to his hot and throws you a couple strikes, Durham Smythe, like, we're not asking much here, buddy. It's not like he was throwing you a deep post. It was a couple slants, pal. Like,
The frustrating thing about those two is that's the pass that I want to see Caleb throwing more. And
right. That's
more.
The thing. It's not
God,
that he,
they were pretty and he dropped
it's
it.
Not,
like, come on, man.
Yeah, you could see Caleb, between the first half and second half of this game, you could see Caleb in real time be like, and I think that, I actually wanted to bring that up. I think that was Flores uses your tendencies against you, and he gets into your, in week one, in the first half, Caleb, you could tell, was just find a completion. And he was like taking all these checkdowns and stuff in week one in the first half. But Flores was like, ha ha ha, motherfucker, I actually gave you the deep stuff and you didn't take it. And then in the second half of that week one game, the Bears tried to switch it up, and then Flores was like, now I'm sending the house at you. In this game, I felt like Caleb, again, was like, okay, I'm hunting deep. And Flores was like, ha ha ha, dipshit, now your checkdowns are open and you're not taking them because you're hunting deep.
Yeah.
And then it felt like in the second half, you watched Caleb in real time be like, okay, I got to take my checkdowns. And he was, especially a couple of those ones from under center where it was like five-step drop, bop, and he was throwing it to Komet in the flat with some touch and letting Komet get upfield.
Yeah.
That was really nice. You saw Caleb in real time hit his checkdowns, the checkdown to Loveland that Loveland broke for a huge gain. You saw him do that in real time. So, like, look, growth in real time in a game. You're watching him adjust to Brian Flores. And then you have Durham Smythe who lets him down. It's like, God damn it. Could the kid be rewarded for doing the right thing for once? It's so frustrating when he does it. And then and I know Pro Football Focus, I think, only technically credited him with 3 drops in this game. But I would say it was closer to, like, 6 balls where it's like, okay, you should have had that, man. I don't think they counted the second one by Smythe as a drop, but like it's a slant route. It hits both hands. I understand there's a defender like right behind you, but just hang on, man. I don't think they called the first one to Burden, which was, that was another one, was a third down, third and four. Good anticipation throw from Caleb. The defender was there. It certainly would have been a tough catch, but what, as we've been saying all season long, we're kind of out of saying, oh, well, it would have been a tough catch. You guys have made exactly zero of those. Like, when we say, oh, it would have been a tough catch, that's implying that you should come down with some of them, and you have come down with none of them. So, like,
I agree with that generally. I would say that one to Burden was, like, perfect defense. And that wasn't like Rome has dropped some this year where he has seen the ball coming the whole way and gone up to get it and got bumped slightly in the back and dropped it. This was like Caleb is trusting Luther to turn around and have the ball hit him in the stomach or the hands and catch it right away, which is great. But it's also very hard to adjust to a defender who is in perfect coverage when that happens. So I don't want to lay into Luther on that one. Now the other
I don't want to lay into Luther specifically, but it's like it's a drop. It's been rough. It's just like it's one of those things where it's just, you know, you have to make the tough catches some of the time.
Yeah.
They're basically like 0 for the season on any catch that is even mildly contested. They're now third in the NFL in dropped passes. It's very, very frustrating. And then and not even just drops, though, because there was that beautiful pass that Caleb threw to Rome in the end zone where I felt like, now I watched it on the All 22 and it did look like Rome got held a little bit, so I'm kind of mad that there was no flag, but at the same time kind of felt like Rome felt the safety coming and alligator armed that one a little bit, which was disappointing for me. Like, that's you're gonna take a hit, man, but like, that's how the red zone works. That's Brian Flores defense. Like, that's your opportunity. You're the ninth overall pick. Hang on. Like, go get it, man. Take the hit. Hang on. That's the shit that's going to make you an all pro someday if you want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, like, you want the Larry Fitzgerald comp. I can tell you, Larry Fitzgerald, that's a touchdown. So.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bunch of stuff that hasn't quite completely come together yet for the Bears. And also, you're playing this defense that is designed to disrupt an offense that hasn't quite come together all the way.
Well, and I think that's another one, too, where people are like, just throw the hot. And I'm like, no. That's Brian Flores. Blitzes are not like that kind of blitz. The whole point is he wants you to throw the hot. Like, he is baiting you to throw the hot because he's actually not, it's not that kind of blitz where you can just replace the blitz and throw. Like, he does have some of those, but a lot of times it's, he's sending two guys on the right side, but there's another guy dropping into coverage on the left. And like, he knows where your hot route's going to be. So he's going for that too. And that's why someone on Twitter today was like, it's not that good of a pass defense. They're like ninth in passer rating against. And I'm like, yeah, because passer rating is a meaningless junk stat that's easily gamed by completion percentage. And a lot of quarterbacks against Brian Flores just check the ball down three times and punt. That's what he wants you to do. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to complete 65% of your passes, but you're going to average, you know, Lamar Jackson's average depth of target last week was 4.2 yards. Caleb was 11.5 this week. Those are the two ways, you know, you can try to beat it. You can either complete a bunch of short passes or you can try to, he leaves you some chunks. Ben and Caleb, we know, are going to go for the chunks. And, you know, if it weren't for a couple drops, they'd have had three more explosive plays on the day and maybe a couple breakaway touchdown passes. So I don't quibble with that game plan, but I think that's why, you know, sure, the completion percentage isn't what you want, but it's not as simple versus Brian Flores as, oh, just throw the hot. That's not how that works. If it were that simple, he wouldn't confound this many quarterbacks. A lot of quarterbacks know how to fucking throw the hot, man.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I really have to say about the offense is the play calling in the red zone is frustrating the shit out of me.
It's not
working right now. The offense isn't working in the red zone. Like, I just don't think there's anything else to say about that. It's got to get
Well, I just think it's one of two things has to happen for them to start scoring more touchdowns in the red zone. Either the
run game magically has to get better.
Right, the run game has to become as automatic as he wants it to be. And I think that's where this comes from. Like, people keep trying to interpret their low pass rate over expectation in the red zone as like a lack of faith in Caleb thing. But if you look, it's basically the exact same pass rate over expectation he had in Detroit with Goff. Like, Ben Johnson wants to run the ball in the red zone. It's what he does. But the thing is, the Bears, even though I know statistically they have had a lot of rushing success over the last couple of weeks, it's schemed production. It's not our guys are better than yours production, which Detroit in the run game the last couple of years, they have had, yeah, I mean, sure, it's schemed because you have Ben Johnson, but it's mostly been our guys are better than your guys. Our offensive line's better than your defensive line, and our backs are better than your backers. The Bears don't have that. Their offensive line is good. It's not elite like Detroit has been the last couple of years. It's, and their running backs get what's schemed up for them. They don't usually get a lot more than that. So when defenses tighten up in the red zone, there just really hasn't been the running room that he wants. And I think we're kind of living with a guy who really believes in establishing the run, and it's frustrating. So either he's going to need to get that run game to where it is automatic, or he's going to have to change his ways a little bit and be like, you know what? Fine. We'll fucking throw the ball in the red zone, even though I don't like it. And it's yucky. Right. So we'll see which happens first.
It'll be interesting. It's going to be an interesting final seven games of the year. But really, the main event here, Kyle, it's got to be the defense. And honestly, not even the defense. The main event has to be good old nine.
Nine!
On the other side of the ball.
Nine! Yeah.
What a fun game to watch.
Oh, Kyle,
it was very gratifying for me personally, because really, I think the pass that put a nail in his coffin with the Minnesota fans was that horrible out route where he completed it to Jonathan Owens, who was just taking a knee on the Bears sideline and caught it. And then he like Jim Halperted towards the field camera. And I could hear the Curb Your Enthusiasm music in the background.
That was the route.
I said, this kid will never be able to throw that in the NFL. He doesn't
yeah,
have
it's...
it. And boy, does he not have it.
Well, to be honest, like as much as we would like to take a victory, I don't think even you and I thought it would be this bad.
No, we didn't.
I thought, okay, whatever is schemed up for him, I thought he'd look like, you know, like Mitch, where it's like, okay, if his first read's there, he'll hit it. He can't. It's like he's on pace to break. Like he's got the second worst off target rate since Pro Football Reference started tracking that, which granted is only since 2019, but he's got the second worst of anybody in that time frame other than Anthony Richardson last year. Like he is so off. There are so many just never in history balls. And I mean, and it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, you got Vikings fans who are coping, although a lot fewer of them are coping this week than last week. But like,
I haven't
Vikings
seen a
like,
whole lot of cope from them.
I've seen,
upset.
I've seen a lot of the like, you know, every fan base's favorite replies. Well, rookie Josh Allen, but like, he's so much worse than that, guys.
Yeah.
Like, even if I wanted to give you the Josh Allen comp, and I've gone into so many different ways in which that comp rarely works. I actually think Caleb Williams is one of the few people that you kind of could use it for a little bit, because it requires a requisite amount of talent, first of all, and it also requires a guy who has pocket presence and is doing most things right, but just kind of spraying the football sometimes. JJ McCarthy doesn't have the talent to begin with, but also he's been far worse than even that. Like through five starts, he's so far below rookie Josh Allen, the person that he is most similar, who is the exact same as through their first five career starts. Travis, did I send you this one earlier today?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
So yes, through five starts, it is. I want to get the exact number here, because now, folks, you all know how much I love adjusted net yards per attempt. You know, where you adjust for the sacks, the touchdowns, the interception. That's the passing stat that most correlates to wins over the years. And so through his first five career starts, Zach Wilson has averaged 3.39 adjusted net yards per attempt. That is the exact same number, 3.39, as Zach Wilson's first five starts. And that's who he looks like right now. It's Zach Wilson, where it's just like the game's clearly so fast for him. He clearly doesn't know what he's doing. His mechanics get rushed and just immediately unworkable. And he's just so obviously panicking, and it's hysterical.
Yeah, I just really thought he was going to fail in that kind of like bland, sad way where he completes a lot of short passes. And yeah,
I thought Mitch Trubisky
doesn't have it anywhere else. Instead, what we got is, yeah, it's a Manziel, it's a Zach Wilson. He just doesn't have any of it.
Yeah, he's just so bad. It's incredible.
Yeah,
and you can tell. I mean,
Justin Jefferson for just holding it together on the sidelines and not going
you can
crazy.
Tell, and you can tell that whole team is so over him already, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is not like they do not believe in this kid at all. And it was really funny because Kevin O'Connell in his postgame presser, like he was asked about they had like one false start this week after having seven, I think, the week before, and they were like, "Is it a problem with the cadence?" And he was like, That's a really common cadence. A lot of teams use it in a way that was like, yeah, man, we already dumbed down the cadence. I can't dumb any of this shit down anymore for this kid. Like, it just literally just, I'm doing everything. The passing game is so compressed. There's so little. They had a -14% pass rate over expected in that game. He's doing literally everything to hide this kid at this point, and the kid is still just fucking it up. It's, you know, to quote Nate when he was talking about Nate Tice, when he was talking about Zach Wilson, it's, there are bumpers out and he is still just yeeting the ball two lanes over. Like, it's, there's nothing you can do to help this kid right now. Plus, yep, he gets to play the Packers and then the Eagles, I think, back to back, or not the Eagles, Packers, and then I think it was the the Rams, I think they said. Jesus, or the Seahawks. Christ. Packers and Seahawks are his next two defenses that he's going to face. That's going to be hard, because here's the thing.
He gets
the Bears
to see
defense,
Darnold? They're going to play Darnold this year?
I believe so.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and like, to be clear, the Bears defense was not good in this game. It was, the pass rush only got like 6 pressures all game long. Tyreek Stevenson got injured because J.J. McCarthy is so bad that he threw the ball at 3 different Bears defensive backs who all collided into each other.
What a pass. Like, getting rid of the rest of our secondary with the shittiest pass imaginable.
It was Nashawn Wright and Nick McLeod versus Jordan Addison and JJ, or and Justin Jefferson. Not what you want.
And they scored 17 points. So, yeah.
Yeah, the only...
That's how bad they are.
17 points, and 7 of those came off of a long-ass kick return and a single handoff. Like,
yep.
Yeah, the story of that game was Brian Flores is a fucking menace, and J.J. McCarthy is also a menace, but in a very different way.
They had Sam Darnold right there, and they could have just, it just cost money. That's it. You could have traded J.J. before this season. You might have recouped a first-round pick. Like, maybe not. Maybe you just get a second. And, you know, your fans are like, oh, you wasted a first-round pick, and now you're just getting a second back. Who cares? You know, you found your quarterback. It's just, I mean, I guess this is what they deserve, right? For that kind of hubris. But God, I'm shocked at this point in the season, Kyle, that we have not gotten a story yet where something has been leaked about who really wanted Sam Darnold to stay and who really hate J.J. McCarthy. You know, like, I can't wait. I'm shocked it's not here yet.
The anonymous leaks that are good. Well, yes. And to be fair, I have heard from a couple different places, and I've told you this before, like, we know the Vikings tried to trade up for Drake May.
Yep.
I have heard that their second choice after that didn't work was actually Michael Penix, before, and then they were stunned when the Falcons did that, and I have heard that it was basically an ownership call that he was like, well, you let Kirk Cousins walk, you can't walk out of this draft without a quarterback. So they just kind of reluctantly were like, all right, J.J. McCarthy it is, I guess, which is why I think they have never seen super invested in the kid. He was a forced third choice, and I think they got him in the building. And I mean, just based on what he looks like, you know, it's kind of like people on Twitter for the longest time or in the media were like, the 49ers never gave Trey Lance a shot. How can you know what you have in the guy if you never let him play? And it's like, do you think they don't know what this guy is doing in the meeting rooms? You don't think they don't know what this guy is doing in practice? Do you think if a guy is truly horrific in those settings, he's going to just be magically good on Sundays? Like, do you think they really need, like, I have known very, very few teams to ever give up on a guy that they've barely played that have come to regret it. The Broncos did it with Paxton Lynch. The 49ers did it with Lance. The 49ers did it with Jim Druckenmiller. You know, very few of those teams have ever been like, oh, we let that guy, you know, if a guy's a disaster in your building, if a guy's a disaster on the practice field, you know what's going to happen. And that's been the vibe. I heard many places that OTAs, mini camps, training camp were just apocalyptic for the Vikings. That was why they used the opportunity to start Carson Wentz as soon as they could, ran him out there as long as he was physically able to do it. They know what they have in the kid, and they know they don't have anything.
Yeah, if you had told me J.J. McCarthy was going to be this much worse than Bo Nix, like, I would have called you an idiot. I think you would have been laughed at by the dumbest people on the internet. And yet here it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not big on Bo Nix still either, but to Bo Nix's credit, he actually played a pretty solid game. against the Chiefs for once. Like, it was an actual four-quarter solid game for him. He didn't light the world on fire, but, you know, I would have doubted that he was even going to do that. But, yeah, I mean, it's JJ is just a disaster.
Yeah, so, hey, credit where credit's due for Bo. Like, I do not like Bo Nix, but, yeah, he had a good game. He's in first place by himself. Drake May, first place, all alone, the New England Patriots. So, second-year quarterbacks unite, Kyle. Second-year quarterbacks from that class have their teams all loaded first place.
Oh, and you want to speak about another? Did you see Michael Penix is probably going to have knee surgery again?
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for him.
Like, it sucks for him. It's just, that comes up every draft, and it really drives me nuts because I get it. Everybody, as armchair fans, as people at home on our couch, I really think there is this kind of Moneyball-like attitude where it's like, oh, when scouts talk about size and medicals, they're just being, you know, they're just blah, 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 blah. There's this idea that it's just they're crusty old guys, you know. I think especially ever since Russell Wilson succeeded, the fans kind of be like, size doesn't really matter that much and all this. But, like, every year there's a guy who says, usually it's Nate Tice, who's like, I don't like this guy because he's too small. And everyone gets mad at him because it's like, ah, we're past that now. But then the guy that he says is too small gets hurt a lot. JJ was a guy that he's small, too. In addition to everything else, JJ McCarthy is small and he's slight and he gets hurt a lot. He's had two injuries already in 2 years. Jaden Daniels gets hurt a lot. And it's the same thing. People had fun watching Michael Penix's tape, but, like, it matters that the guy had his knees surgically repaired twice in college.
Yeah.
Knees don't get better when you enter the NFL. Like, come on, man. And you watch his lower body, and oh my god, the 40-yard dash time with him. People are like, he ran a 4.54. Okay, in a straight line, after working all offseason to do it, in shorts. Watch him try to move sideways in the pocket. Watch the play where he got hurt. That is the lower body movement of a 35-year-old man.
Yeah, that's the part that really drove me nuts about Penix, is like, I've been watching this guy play football for what feels like my entire life, you know, at Indiana, and then moving on to Washington, and he's not a runner. He just doesn't run, and then all of a sudden people are like, okay, but look at his 40 time. Okay, look at all of the tape that exists of him, which is like an entire NFL career's worth of college tape. He doesn't run. He can't. He can't do it, man. Like, what was his side-to-side numbers, you know? Like, this dude's knees don't work. So,
like I said, my favorite stat that I quoted it a lot that I found during that was when his last year of college, when he was moved off of his spot, he was, hold on, the number is hysterical, because he had the highest of anyone in the draft class. He did have the highest attempt percentage when moved off. So I always remember his last year of college, Jaden Daniels only threw the ball 15 times when he was moved off of his spot, like all season long, because he doesn't create, he just runs. Penix threw the ball 71% of the time his last year in college when he was moved off the spot. Caleb Williams threw it 65% of the time, which is, again, what we've seen in the NFL. Caleb doesn't scramble to run, he scrambles to throw. But Penix was 9 for 36 for 89 yards with one touchdown and one interception when he was moved off of his spot his last year in college. That is, hold on, what's 89 divided by 36? That should be a fun yards per attempt number. 2.5 yards per attempt when moved off of his spot. All you had to do was just make this kid move, and you have rendered him complete. Caleb Williams, for example, his last year at USC was 36 for 78. For 786 yards and 9 touchdowns. Yeah. When moved. Caleb averaged over 10 yards per pass attempt when moved off of his spot. Penix averaged 2.5. Like, you just can't, in 2025, you cannot run a guy like that out there and expect him to stay healthy. And he didn't, so.
Yeah, the fun thing, though, here's the good thing about J.J. McCarthy sucking, is it's not going to stop NFL front offices from drafting mystery box guys, because guess what? Jackson Dart looks good. So let's do it again, guys. Let's get back at it this draft. Let's draft another one of these mystery guys so I can laugh at them.
Well, and the one thing I will say about J.J., if you want to hold out hope for him, the thing that we tried to call out is it didn't make sense for the, and this was the same thing with Trey Lance, is it's like people talk about, oh, he's going to a good situation. They talk about the coach and the weapons and the defense. And it's like, that's a bad situation. Like, you want to, what you want to go to as a rookie quarterback is you want to go to a team that pretty much sucks ass and has no expectations, but has a good coach and a good offensive line. That's the dream situation for a rookie quarterback, actually, because then you get unlimited chances to fuck up, but you don't take hits and you don't get your confidence destroyed. It's a bad situation when it's the 49ers or the Vikings, and it's like, look, we have Super Bowl aspirations, and you have Justin Jefferson and TJ Hockenson and Jordan Addison, and I could put a trained monkey back there under center and get Brock Purdy results, motherfucker, so you better be good or else. Because the instant JJ struggles, you see what happens. They shadow bench him for Carson Wentz, and the whole team's out on him, and Justin Jefferson's pissed off. Like, that's not a good situation. Yeah. And we talked about with JJ, he had such a low number of dropbacks, and it's not that you can't draft the low dropback guy, because there are some success stories in there, but almost none of the success stories were guys who were good early. We said they were guys who broke out in year three, end of year two, and JJ's not going to get till end of year two. Well, I mean, technically he's in year two, but he's not going to get 2 years as a starter to figure this shit out. They're already done with him.
So. They are bringing in a quote-unquote veteran to compete with him, and that veteran is not there to compete with him. He is going to be there to take his job and run away with it, for sure.
Yeah.
I wonder who that'll be. I guess we'll see. Well, okay, like, man, I wish this
My worst fear is that they go after Kyler, I guess, because if not going to rehab Kyler, that would suck.
Oh, fuck. God damn it. All right, well, I'm not going to think about that right now. Kyle, good news. Things we didn't get to talk about last week happened right after we recorded. Jalen Johnson has been activated.
Yes, he's been activated. Yes, so that is, that. I guess, so that's the hope right now for the Bears. If you want me to, because I've seen some Bears fans be kind of upset that, you know, it's like they're 7-3 and they're still not getting any respect, blah, blah, blah. And here's the thing. It's kind of complicated because they have won a lot of close games, and people are naturally skeptical of that. I think we have pointed out that in a lot of those close wins, they actually were the better team in terms of yard. Just like this game against the Vikings. Like, they should have never been in a situation where they needed the last kick. Same with the Commanders. Like, they outgained the Commanders. They won the turnover battle. Same thing with the Vikings. They outgained them. They won the turnover battle. Most of these, the Giants, if they just caught the goddamn ball, they would have been up 2 touchdowns in the first half. You know, it's one of those things where they have mostly needed the late game luck to make up for their own bad luck earlier in the game. But at the same time, this so far, largely due to injuries, also due to Ryan Poles' inability to build a defensive line, hasn't been a good defense. So, and turnover luck has mostly bailed them out. The offense has been a top 10 unit, but inconsistent. So I think there is a degree of, you shouldn't trust how legitimate the 7-3 so far is. But there is the possibility that those wins are banked. You don't have to apologize for them. There is the possibility that they can legitimize themselves going forward, because the path actually is pretty easy there. It's Caleb Williams and the offense finally have that game, that stretch of games that feels like it's been coming all year and hasn't quite, where everything clicks. They stop dropping the ball. They stop having the penalties. Everything just works. And it all clicks together. That 2022 Lions run, that still feels like it's in there potentially. And if you do get Jalen Johnson back, and it sounds like that's actually going to happen, if you do get Kyler Gordon back, then your defense can become a little bit more legitimate. And then, if you have a top 8 offense that's actually performing consistently like a top 8 offense every week, and the defense is at least league average, then that is what you call a playoff contender. So that's the hope. And so with Jalen Johnson potentially coming back, that is huge. That you could maybe start to envision a scenario where you don't need to use Nashawn Wright or Nick McCloud. Although Tyreek got hurt, haven't gotten an update there. It does sound like, because he was talking to media after the game, they said that that's probably a good sign. So hopefully we're not that far away from a game where you have Jalen, Kyler, and Tyreek. You're not using Nashawn Wright for anything other than the fourth corner. You've got CJ Gardner-Johnson and Kyler Gordon in there together. That could be a really cool thing to watch. And then, if that happens, then maybe you can have a defense that's legitimately good and not just relying on bad quarterbacks to miss throws, and your offense hits that second level that I think we all feel is in there somewhere and just hasn't hit consistently yet.
Yeah. So I question if Jalen Johnson's going to be back this week. Definitely the week after, you would have to think, against Philadelphia. Oh my God, we will need him in that game. Or maybe not. Look, we've gotten pretty lucky this year, Kyle. We may get Mason Rudolph here. Maybe the Eagles finally implode this week. The offense just maybe AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts stab each other or something.
Well,
you know,
Lane
it feels like
Johnson,
that's where we're headed.
Lane Johnson has a Lisfranc injury and is going to miss that Bears game. So I don't know if you've seen the stats, but the splits the last couple of years when the Eagles have Lane Johnson versus when they don't are quite stark.
I don't know if you've seen their offense the last couple weeks, but I mean, I know you have because we've watched it and talked about it as it goes. They've been abysmal. So this is going to be like a 6-3 game, maybe.
So, yeah. So maybe there's, there is a path here to definitely 100% becoming a legitimate playoff team. But at the same time, I don't really blame people for still kind of looking askew at this Bears team until and it could come as early as Sunday because the Steelers defense is another one. They struggled earlier in the year, but they've kind of figured some stuff out ever since they moved Jalen Ramsey to safety. That's a very good pass rush. I'm kind of concerned about that. But if the offense puts it together and they put up points against this Steelers defense, and you know maybe they get some defensive backs healthy this week and they hold the Steelers offense, if they get a nice, you know, solid more than a field goal win against the Steelers, then maybe you start to get some respect, guys. So it's all still ahead of them. They can earn it, but I don't really blame people for feeling like they haven't quite earned it yet.
Yeah. I mean, people could think what they want to think. Like, I lived through the 2001 Bears, and I had a fantastic time that whole season. And that whole season, it was like, you know what? They haven't beat anybody of note, and they lost to the three teams who were clearly better than them, you know? But it was fun. And right now, this is a lot of fun. Being in first place is a blast. Like, and this is the thing. Like if you can structure a season this way, this is kind of the season that you wanted last year. You know, you wanted to like build that momentum against the easy teams early and then maybe, you know, ride it through when Caleb is comfortable in the offense. That's kind of what we're getting here. We didn't think we had the schedule for it, but God, things have really fallen into place for the Bears to play. You know, like the Commanders were down, you know, we're playing every wrong quarterback in the AFC North. Like we took two hard losses early and then we've gone 7-1 since. Like things have been lining up pretty well. Like I've been enjoying the season. I don't know, man. I have no predictions for this Steelers game. Like you said, they're kind of a team in transition, it feels like. Like I don't really have them nailed down.
Yeah. Well, it's a very good pass rush. I have a lot of respect for TJ Watt. I have a lot of respect for Nick Herbig as a great player. And like I said, they seem to have figured some stuff up on the back end. Because earlier in this season, I mean, they were just giving up tons of yak on everything. But they seem to have figured some stuff out ever since they moved Ramsey to safety. So, you know, I'm not expecting them to just romp all over this defense. But, I mean, at some point, the offense does have to put up a solid performance against a better-than-average defense. So this would be a good week to do that. Would love to happen. So,
hell yeah. Well, but yeah, I mean, I'm in the Ravens to get back into first place there.
Yeah, to do some coach speak here. We'll take it one week. And that's really where I'm, you know, we talked a little bit about it earlier this week, but, like, I was just saying that in the sense that, like, I'm trying not to take my eye off the ball and that I still think that 9 wins and a top 15 offense with a quarterback that's trending up is still a successful season here. I'm trying not to take my eye off that ball. But, you know, as of right now, I'm just taking it one week at a time, man, and trying to enjoy the wins while they're happening. And I'm trying to enjoy the chaos of 9.
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's been a fun season so far. Like I'm pretty high on everything that the Bears have going on. I feel this like sense of calm, like both because I just think this coaching staff is fantastic. I think Ben Johnson is great, regardless of whatever, you know, foibles he made in this game. That happens sometimes in the NFL. But also, Kyle, this is like, we haven't talked about the end of this game much, which is crazy, but I think that speaks to how like calm I was going into the end of the game. My worry was that the Vikings would somehow run out the clock to where we wouldn't have enough time. But when they scored that touchdown and there were 50 seconds left, I was like, oh, we're good. Like,
I wasn't that concerned about it. I was like, they'll find a way to get a field goal here. They really will.
This is all we've done this season, man. Like, you give Caleb enough time, we'll be fine. We didn't even end up needing Caleb.
And I sort of wonder if Cairo had made that first field goal and it was 19-10, do you think people would be more positive because then it would have felt like they earned it? Like, because the Bears didn't need a comeback because the offense drove them down for the field goal that made it. I almost wonder if people would be more positive if that had happened. I don't know.
Well, I tell you what, from a national perspective, all this has done is raise the status of Caleb Williams even further, even though he did nothing on that final drive. They're like, oh, Caleb Williams and the Bears, they get another comeback win late in the fourth. The Iceman does it again. And I'm like, this, okay, the narrative has changed nationally. Caleb Williams is now the Iceman. This is going to stick forever, I guess. He didn't do anything, but all right. Like, I guess he channeled his spirit into Devin Duvernay, and that's what caused that kickoff return to go so well. One feather in Richard Hightower's cap before one of these upcoming games is completely blown by his special teams. I can smell it.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've got nothing left. You know, it's so weird. Like, the Bears are in first place all by themselves. Like, big celebration, good feelings everywhere. But this game was really like kind of a nothing burger. You can't really pull anything out of it.
Yeah, for the love of God, could someone give Brian Flores a head coaching job and just get him out of this fucking division?
Yeah, preferably in the AFC. Anybody in the AFC want?
You know, I think what Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans need is a hard-nosed disciplinarian like Brian Flores. Plus, he would do some really sicko shit with Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons. So, you know, just go get him.
I kind of like Flores. I don't know if I want to send him there. Can we think of a different AFC? What about the Bengals? You think they'll fire their idiot head coach? You think maybe they can give Brian Flores that job? Anyway, get away from me. How about that? Get the fuck away from me, Brian. I am tired of dealing with your defenses.
Yeah. All right.
I'll talk to you in exactly 1 week. And not at all. From now until then, right?
No.
Yeah. All right. See ya.
Bye.
Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. But I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.